Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Dan O'Brien and his wife Jill created Wild Idea Buffalo Company in 1997 with the mission of preserving the Great Plains by returning buffalo to their native habitat. O'Brien is the author of novels and memoirs, including Buffalo for the Broken Heart, Restoring Life to a Black Hills Ranch, and Wild Idea, Buffalo and Family in a Difficult Land. He speaks at Augustana University tonight in Sioux Falls. His presentation is called Buffalo, Baby Boomers, and Beyond Toward a More Sustainable Use of North American Grasslands. We're broadcasting live today from the University of Sioux Falls, and Dan O'Brien is here with me in the studio. Welcome.
It's good to be here.
I'm so pleased to finally be able to meet you in person. It seems strange that we have never crossed paths before personally, but hopefully it's the beginning of multiple conversations.
I feel the same way. I feel like I should be interviewing you. I think you do a wonderful job for a public radio, and we're lucky to have you. Thanks.
Thank you so much. And one of my goals this year is to read South Dakota authors just all year long. So I'm with Linda Hazelstrom right now and enjoying her book very much. And you are again on the pile, as is Kent Myers, as is Kathleen Norris, and some other great voices. So what a pleasant way to spend the year, by the way.
That's great. I all those people I go back with 30, 40 years, of them. I just read Linda's upcoming memoir, which will be out, I think, in about 9 months. And we're all in for another treat.
Wonderful. I just absolutely admire and respect her. So now I'm done geeking out for a little bit. Let's talk about your visit to Augustana, because students there come see you, and now you're coming to see them. Tell me why they come out to the ranch.
Well, Craig Spencer, who teaches biology over there, has been, he sort of ferreted us out years ago as a place to come bring his students and to get them out on a ranch that depends on grass. And we sort of have had this relationship for several years now. And we always say, geez, you need to come to Augie and all that. And so this year, especially with Stephanie Herseth being the new president, I thought, well, now I have to go. So I'm really happy to be at Augie. It's a great South Dakota resource.
Right. Baby Boomers is in the title of your presentation tonight, and that piqued my interest because I'm wondering how that fits into what you want to talk to these young students about.
Well, I'm old, and actually it has just occurred to me that I'm old. And if there's anything that old people have, it's advice. And so I really want to talk to the younger generations really about some of the things that I've done wrong, and maybe some of the things that I've done right. And looking, it's a very challenging time, as we all know, and I've got some advice for younger people.
Where does it begin? And when, if you had gotten this advice when you were college age, younger man, would you have, what's the advice that would have made the most difference to you?
I think that the message that I have tonight, or part of the message that I have tonight, is life really is a battle. It's not easy. It's not meant to be easy. If you think it's easy, you're not trying hard enough. And I know that those of us who were of that era. I mean, I grew up in the '60s, and that was a challenging time. But it was also possibly the pinnacle of our culture, as far as freedom, constitutional stuff. Everybody was thinking about, or a lot of people were thinking about the right things then. But I think we took our foot off the accelerator.
How come? What happened? Because I think a lot of people would agree with that, to say this was a generation who did, took the foot off the accelerator. Why?
First of all, I think we got beaten down by the generation. And, if there's one thing that I can say to the younger generation now is, I'm not going to beat you down. I'm listening. we let those people intimidate us, and they won out, but we're still alive.
What has this generation really continued to do, though, that the next generation can look to and say, yeah, we need to emulate that?
Yeah, and I think there are some great examples of that. Unfortunately, you know, the way the system works with this whole culture of celebrity and the power that, you know, economic advantages have, a lot of those, you don't hear those voices, but they are out there. There are some real thought leaders running around this world today that came out of the 60s, and I think they should be listened to.
Let's talk about writing and ranching and how those two things have interwoven throughout your life and still do.
You know, that there's a lot of serendipity in in a life, and particularly, I think particularly maybe my life, it's been serendipitous. Writing is something that I can't not do. And so a lot of times, you know, I came with just within, you know, just a frog's hair of quitting, like a lot of times. And I've always liked to be outside. And Western South Dakota, it really is a paradise for me. And it really kind of works with writing. I can't not do it, so when I'm inside, I usually write. I don't do television, and I spend a lot of time. In fact, I would say it's constant. I think a writer, and I think you know about this, it's always percolating in there. And about the time the winter storm comes, you put on a piece of paper. So they do go together. And then recently, you know, I've done this, gotten into this thing with buffalo as far as ranching is concerned. And I didn't think anybody in the world would be interested in buffalo, but it turns out they are. And you know, it always, the books are better if you're interested in the subject.
Did you, do you doubt yourself as a writer now? You talk about being intimidated or, you know, held down and, you know, maybe politically or culturally by a generation in the past. Now that you've been doing this for as long as you have, do you still look at the work and have any self-doubt?
I mean, I have self-doubts all the time. I mean, I feel like an imposter, even sitting here talking to you. You know, it's just, I can't, I don't think of the work past. I always think of the next book. And and the next book is, you know, you never know. Mm-hmm. I just sent one off to my agent, and she's hard-nosed, and she'll send it back, and you know, it'll look like somebody bled all over it. and that's my 14th book.
Right.
So, you know, it's a long uphill grind, and it doesn't really change much.
What would you need to hear that would take away? Is there anything that can take away self-doubt, or do you need that? Is that what makes you a better writer and a more engaged in the craft?
I like to think that I don't need it, but I would say that it's nice when it comes along.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, I can't even remember what the books were about anymore, and so I just started, just kind of plugged through my life, and the books just sort of boil up in your wake, I think, is how it happens. But, you know, I'd like to, you know, I'm waiting for a call from the MacArthur Foundation, and, or, you know, but that call isn't coming, so I don't dwell on that. But yeah, it's nice to be noted.
Right. When you talk sustainability with the grasslands in South Dakota and the buffalo, are there things that people still don't understand about that? And really,
it's huge. I mean, the misunderstanding about grasslands is immense. I mean, you know, this is the biggest ecosystem in North America, and it's the least protected. It is the least understood, I think. And so there's a, there's a world of subjects to write about when you talk about the grassland. And it, you know, you always get into politics, you get into science, you get into biology, geology. And so that part never ends. There's plenty to write about there because people really don't know what it is. We don't even know where it is for sure because it does move, you know, with agriculture. And of course, it's bound up with agriculture. And industrial agriculture is extremely problematic to all environments. And so there's a tremendous push and pull there between the ecosystem of the Great Plains and agriculture. Because basically agriculture has been working for 150 years to destroy the Great Plains. It's kind of the job of agriculture, is to kill everything else that's out there except corn and beans.
So what are the conversations that need to be had about that as that force still drives forward?
Well, I think we have to be realistic in that things do change. I'm talking to some classes this afternoon, Lewis and Clark kind of classes, and you know, to my way of thinking, that really was pinnacle stuff. You know, when those guys first came through that with the culture that they were part of. So, but it does change. It does change. And I think our job is to make sure that it doesn't change for the worse. And I don't think we're winning that one.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about resilience and the sense that, you know, one of the first things you said was, you know, at life, if it's not a little bit of a battle, maybe you're not doing it right. Do you think that we're in an era where we don't quite understand sacrifice, where we don't quite understand that? Are we hoping that it will be easier than maybe it's supposed to be?
Well, you know, I mean, there's some real mythology around writing and around farming. And part of the mythology has to do with how tough it is. It's writing is a tough racket. Farming is a tough racket. But it's not really that tough. You know, getting your kids out of Syria, that's tough. And so I don't think that we can really complain about that too much. I mean, God, I've got cars to drive and internet and, you know, citizen of the world and all that kind of stuff. So it's not that tough. We should be able to take some of that leisure time and apply it to things that really matter. And it seems to me that too often we apply it to the trivial.
Mm-hmm. What is the... How does that apply to when you sit down and write? Do you have to deal with that notion of, am I applying my writing time to trivial topics, or am I tackling what really needs to be done? In other words, how do you prioritize that writing time? Because it's not infinite.
Well, you're right there. It certainly isn't infinite. I think that's dictated pretty much by your character, by who you are as a person. And I think that it's really hard to write about something that you're not vested in. Mm-hmm. And what happens is you know, it comes through. And in my writing, you know, a lot of it's about grass and horses and that kind of stuff. But a lot of it's about people, too. And what I, you know, where I think that people waste their energy is when they write about, Facebook would be a good example.
Right. When we say things like dignity regarding buffalo, and we say things like, you know, the way they're managed to not be stressed, how integral is that into the process of what you do, and why is it important to make that process as natural and as least stressful as possible for the animal?
It's interesting that you would use the term dignity. I just, Dale Lamphere is a real good friend of mine from 40 years ago, and I just drove across the state and saw his sculpture.
Right, yeah.
Dignity.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw it several times while it was being built. Sat and drank whiskey and looked up at it with Dale. But it, you know, over that river, the way it sits, it seems to me that that's part of the answer to your question, because that Lakota woman that is really embodying dignity is not unlike Buffalo. And I think that, you know, there's a way of looking at the world where we are related. And when I say we, that is all the species are related. I'm not much of a religious guy, but if I had to choose a religion, it would have something to do with that relationship. And I think that your relatives always deserve dignity. And when I see buffalo being loaded into trucks, hauled off to feedlots, pushed into slaughter plants where they're killed by people who don't care, I think we can do better than that.
I think we can do better than that. That might be something to just think about all week long. I think I can do better than that. I'm going to write that down. Your friendships, you mentioned Linda, you mentioned Dale, and the lifelong friendships you've had with other artists and other South Dakotans. How much have the friends that you have chosen changed who you are as a writer and as a person?
Yeah, I don't know that they've changed me. I think that we've grown up together. Mm-hmm. Dale, Linda, Kent Myers, and some of the musicians, James Van Nuys, Bob Fay, all these people are just part of who I grew up with. But we do have a culture here in South Dakota. And I would say particularly around the Black Hills, there's a real artist culture out there. You know, we don't get together every Tuesday night or anything, but there's no question that that's my group. That's my tribe.
Do you think that there's opportunity in this state in the current, in 2017, for a similar synergy to occur between, creative types and thinkers and people who are having those conversations to sort of be friends lifelong and create a kind of work that has an impact on? I mean, you put those people together and you think of the impact that group, I mean, each as an individual is probably unmeasurable. As a group, it's astounding. Is that possible now within a Facebook culture and a social media culture and a culture where, people leave the state as frequently as they do, that another group like that can come along?
You know, that's a question that I ask myself once in a while, where are the young people? And it gets into the question of the generational thing. I don't know those people. I suspect that they are out there. And I suspect that they're working on this kind of a tribal gathering. But I have to say that I don't see them, and I hope they're out there. I'm sure they are.
If your agent places this new book with the publisher, what do we have to look forward to next from Dan O'Brien?
This book is called Above the Bakken, and it's a novel that's set in southwestern North Dakota, a place where I've spent a lot of time, and basically it's talking about what happens when the earth that you live on is developed for oil.
Mm. What was the process of that for you as a writer to really spend time with those characters and in that novel?
I've been up there. I'm a big bird hunter, and I bird hunt because I like walking across the prairie, and it gives me an excuse. And I used to go up there. I worked for South Dakota Game and Fish when I was a young man. And so I was up in Buffalo in Harding County. And so up in that country, I know that country pretty well, from the ground up. A couple of my books are set in that country. But I was up there bird hunting with a good friend four or five years ago now. And I hadn't been there for a few years, and the changes were immense. And some of the places that we hunted that I've hunted for years, I mean, for like 40 years, 50 years, you know, I've known the people. And I just got to thinking about the changes. And so those of you who haven't been up there should go, because it's as bad as everybody says it is. And the real losers in that are the people that loved and knew the land, and of course the other species.
Dan O'Brien, our time is short, unfortunately, and I'm wondering if you were to leave listeners with a piece of, not advice, but you know, a message. Would it be one about writing? Would it be one about diversity in species? Would it be one about friendship? What would you walk out the door and say?
Well, as another good friend of mine told me one time, after too much whiskey, Bill Fleming, for those of you who might know him, we were talking about these kind of things, and he looked at me and he said, "Dan, it's all one thing. There's only one thing." That's a good thing to leave you with.
Dan O'Brien, it has been a privilege and an honor. I hope that you will come back and see me again.
Done deal.
All right. You can see him tonight at Augustana University. The presentation is Buffalo, Baby Boomers, and Beyond, Toward a More Sustainable Use of North American Grasslands.